Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's Wednesday on USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast, which means it's Trends Day, where we take a look at developing trends in football from all levels. And we're going to look at a lot of the college plays this week, a few NFL plays. And as this goes on, really am interested to see what we can dig up from some of the high school plays that we see from around the country as well. And joining me on the podcast, our guest host each week, former NFL coach, founder and CEO of First Down Playbook, Charlie Quinter. Charlie, great to have you back.
Hey, Keith. Great day.
And Zach Dunn, our content coordinator at USA Football, as well as an analyst. Zach, great to have your insight here today.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. So this week, I want to start off with a play we talked about last week on All 22 Tuesday, which you can find over at First Down Playbook, the video that we do outlining some plays weekly. And one of the plays we looked at was a bunch formation from the Browns, which had a stretch play going away from the bunch, a bubble screen basically out to the bunch side, and reading that linebacker who kind of gets put in no man's land as this play stretches one way and the other. And so we saw that from the Cleveland Browns, and this week it moved a little bit south of Cleveland to Columbus, and Ohio State used it for a touchdown. So definitely you see coaches copying and taking a look at, and we don't know, maybe the Browns got that from Ohio State. We don't know exactly how that became part of each team's offense, but we saw the same play at both levels.
No doubt. I mean, I looked, as I was looking at it, Keith, I'm going like, we already did this play. Oh, that's right. I related to a team in Ohio, and I realized that we'd done it the week before. But once again, I mean, football coaches have been copying each other for a million years and will for another million. And that's smart, because if you look at those two plays and you look at the way you line up to that play in particular, only so many ways you're going to line up. And that's probably the beauty of the RPO game and you know, all of the pre-snap, post-snap read that you got right now. If you hear an offensive coach talk at the clinic, you're going to be right. And so both of those teams were when they ran it. So good play to copy.
And for our listeners out there, I want to remind you that you want to check out our show notes for short video clips of all the different plays that we talk about. So if you're wondering what these look like, check those out. And as the week goes on, we'll try to get some of those diagrams in there as well. And then Zach and myself do write some articles on this. And the next trend I want to talk about that I said has been developing, and I'm seeing more and more, is teams going under center. Teams who traditionally have been shotgun-only teams now showing up with their quarterback under center in their offense. And one team that I focused on, again, was the Buckeyes. I did an article on this one, which will be up this week on blogs.usafootball.com. And in this past game, Ohio State was under center with their first team, with Justin Fields, 28% of the time. And clearly they have a plan for that. They're going to run the ball, get downhill. They certainly seem to favor their stretch play under center and then run play action off of it. Now, when I look at it, and I point some of this out in the article, their play action was very efficient and effective. They were 5 of 6 for 92 yards. They had one other one, which they ran for a 5-yard gain on a naked where they got the quarterback out on the edge, 92 yards and one touchdown. So that's the kind of thing you want to see from your passing game. Now, conversely, on the other side, they did run 3 play action plays from gun. One of them was complete for 14 yards. So not exactly the type of sell you get. And that's a big reason, you know, when you read the article, I have a quote from Mike Yersich in there about why they wanted to go under center a little bit more, because you do get that downhill run game, number one, the vision for your tailback, and then number two, you're able to sell the run a little bit longer than you would and differently than you would when you're in the gun.
Looking at what we saw this week and, you know, following up on the conversation that we've been having, there's no question that the quarterbacks are up under there more. And you know, you look back at why did we take them out from under the center to start with? Well, you know, part of it was all about the vision of the quarterback. You know, the quarterback can see better. in the shotgun. Quarterback can see better in the pistol. Well, truth be known, a lot of our quarterbacks that we're grooming these days are not going to be sitting back there throwing the ball 30, 40 times anyway from a pocket. And so when you start looking at what they're going to need to do, they're going to need to have more deception. They're going to need to hide the football. They're actually going to need to turn their back to the defense and hide that ball. And so having said that, because the other thing we're definitely seeing, we are certainly seeing a ton of wing T misdirection, all of that sort of offense, whether it's the Baltimore Ravens are doing an incredible job right now for the first two games with that, all the way down to, you know, I'm sure there's some high school teams that have been doing it for 30 years. But having committed to that, I think that that's another reason why you're seeing the quarterbacks under center more.
Yeah, it's funny, Keith. You know, I think it was last year, the Rams, when under center, were like 97% run or play action. Only like 3% was actual drop back. So I think that stems a bit from Jared Goff playing in a shotgun system for 4 years at Cal. His under center footwork for drop back, that'd be 3 step or 5 step, is, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's terrible. I mean, he had little experience with it in high school and college. So taking drops from under center, he's not very good at. But being under center, they're in a lot of play action and, you know, move the pocket. And really, that play action was good for him because it created the easy reads. As in, you know, when you're in a play action concept, it's, you know, you got a deep route, a intermediate route, then a underneath route. You know, just create easy three-level read for him. But also, when you go to play action, like say it's wide zone or duo or anything, the quarterback is going to turn his back to defense. And I think that's huge because when you're in the gun, you know, we have play fakes in the gun, you know, but the ball is always being held right there for the linebackers to see. You know, they're never losing track of the ball. He don't know if it's in, you know, when they're under center, he doesn't know if it's in the running back's belly or if it's in the quarterback's belly still. He has no clue because the quarterback's back to them. So I think that's a big reason too, because I think the play action game is way better under center than from the gun. And also the play action game helps a lot of quarterbacks that, you know, might not be Tom Brady or Drew Brees, or they can step back on the gun and, you know, just, you know what they're getting and, you know, make the right read every time. So I think play action creates a lot of easier reads for the quarterback. Play action is great because I think also because, you know, whether you're getting two deep or three deep, what you end up having a lot of time is your two hook defenders, which are backers, are, you know, they're trying to fill a gap, but also trying to run with a deep crosser. But also, I like the running back's angles, like you said, Keith, from under center. You know, the wide zone angle under center is completely different than the wide zone angle from the gun. And, you know, even when it comes to power and other schemes, I think it's more of a downhill. Like you said, it's more downhill. The back reads it quicker. The back makes it cut quicker. So, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why teams are going to under center more. But, I mean, I will say I do love it.
Now, to play devil's advocate with that, I got into the pistol probably around 2009, 2010. I was using it before that. I had originally seen it before it was called the pistol. It was Coach Kaczkowski, was the head coach at Ohio Northern, gave a presentation on the shotgun eye somewhere early 2000 before Chris Alt invented the pistol. So we definitely did not have the technology and things were not as widespread as they are today. I mean, today somebody does something new, you see the highlights by the end of the day. But at that time we started using it and it was okay. I'd never loved the play action from it though. So I think it was 2010. We were messing around in the office, going through footwork before spring ball and trying to figure out how we can make our play action look better from the pistol. Cause we did want to get our guy downhill and we wanted our guy in the gun. And what we did was we actually reversed out and turned our back on every single play from the pistol. It really didn't mess up any of the timing. It sold, the tempo of it was much better as far as selling the run and the timing, that it wasn't just a quick poke in the belly showing the football to the defense, that the ball was disappearing. And, you know, immediately I'd always go the other side for feedback and ask our linebackers, what do you guys think of that? And like, we're losing the ball. We don't see it anymore. We could see it before. We don't see it now. So, you know, it's something to think about. I have seen teams doing it. I think we first saw that maybe from Coach DiNardo at, I want to say he was at Indiana at the time. They were doing that and, you know, became a big part of what we do. So the key isn't necessarily you have to go under center to do it, but you better find better ways to hide the football from the defense if you want effective play action.
Zach made a good point, too. I think that if you're a high school coach out there, and I'm gonna tread on ground that I probably maybe shouldn't, but, you know, he's talking about in the NFL that, you know, if you're taking quarterback that's young and you're putting him on the center and you're doing all these things, well, when it comes time for third down, get him back there doing what he normally does. Well, I'm not so sure. You know, if it's third down and something goes wrong, and it's third down and 14, and you're a wing T team, I'm not so sure that it wouldn't be a good idea to just have a handful of drop back plays and let your quarterback get back there in the pistol or gun to have a chance if you're going to throw it. I know there's some guys out there aren't going to throw it even on third and 14 if they're a wing T.
Nah, they're going to run the Joker crisscross.
my high school that I went to was one of them. I watched the first game this year, and they didn't throw it, and won by about 30. But if you are going to throw it, you know, there's something to be said for the other side of it, not the NFL. You know, you're in high school, maybe just have a handful of plays where you'll come out and four wide and throw it, and don't try to do it from up underneath the center, because I've seen some really bad-looking pass plays that come from under center when it's third and like 14 or 15.
Absolutely. Well, moving on to our next topic and another play. We've seen a variation of this. We talked last week about Texas's counter and swing RPO. It was a quarterback counter, and they ran it a few times against LSU for success. Indiana did a similar concept. They used the dart concept, though, so just pulling the tackle, they had that same swing read. And it was effective for them as well against Ohio State, a play that got them some yardage. So, again, just seeing some variations of those plays that we talked about earlier. You know, we liked that counter RPO. I think we highlighted it maybe a little bit more in the All-22 Tuesday. So, again, you want to check that out. But again, just seeing teams find something that is effective for somebody else and putting a little bit of their own twist on it. Another concept that we've been seeing, and certainly it is not new to football, definitely from the Hal Mumme, Mike Leach, Tony Franklin school of thought, the old Kentucky mesh is certainly making a strong comeback. I'm seeing team after team use the mesh, and then I start to see some variation. So mesh with the spot route coming in the middle, you see those meshes cross, or sometimes they run the mesh return where they start on the mesh, bounce back out, but the other guy's going over top and into the middle. When we were running mesh at BW, our coach just used to call that the curl back, and they used to run it the same way too. So that has definitely made a comeback. And then the other variation I'm seeing with it is with a second guy trailing the mesher, the first mesher, to set up a pick and basically get that other guy out into space. So I saw that from Iowa State and Alabama. And Alabama's running with the back out of the backfield, but it still was essentially getting the two guys crossing on the shallow level. So, Zach, I know you had some perspective on where all this comes from. We know that certainly that Leach and Mumme and Tony Franklin originally created the mesh concept. But some of those things with the spot route and with that second pick has become popular with other coaches as well.
Yeah, so the mesh with the over the route ball or over the ball route or the spot route, like you're saying, that got pretty hot with Chip Kelly at Oregon, then with the Eagles. They started running that a lot with the tailback on the wheel route. So, you know, it was a pretty pure progression read. You know, he would read tailback, mesher coming towards the tailback, and spot route. You know, that was his boom, boom, boom. That was his three reads. And a lot of people for a while started calling that, you know, the Chip Kelly mesh. But really, if you go back and look at Mike Martz's playbooks from the Rams, he was running that same as they played with the Rams back, you know, 99. I saw it in some Bruce Arians playbooks in like 2004, 2008. So it's been around for a while. I know that Chip Kelly used to run something off of it as well called mesh return, which is looks like the same exact thing. It starts out like the same exact thing, except when the meshers, the guys are in the mesh, put their foot in the ground, and they pivot back outside at like 3 to 4 yards. That's good for teams that want to run, you know, one route and they want to cut crossers and stuff. That's great for that. And the play you're talking about, Keith, where they're setting like a double pick for the back coming out of the backfield. I saw that get pretty popular after the Falcons Patriots Super Bowl in 2016 when Shanahan ran it on the goal line. Because, you know, the Patriots are a big, big, big man coverage team. So, you know, he had a couple beaters set up for that. And I've seen it a lot since then. Andy Reid runs it quite a bit now. I think he hit the Patriots on it for a touchdown last year. I've heard it referred to as tornado, but it's a really cool concept. It's kind of like the old, you know, like the old drive concept where, you know, you have kind of like back cross, you know, you have a 10-yard dig, you got a shallow and you get the back coming out across. It kind of looks like that, except for that guy that is usually running the drive is now like running like it's just a blatant pick's all it is. He's just kind of running there in the middle of the field and just muddying everything up. But it's a great man coverage beater. Great, great man coverage beater.
I know, Charlie, you've been shaking your head as we've looked at some of these as to how these are legal and what these officials are looking at.
So I'm sure this might be sacrilege here, but when I was looking at the tape, I mean, Alabama was cheating. That was a three-level pick if I'd ever seen one. But I'm listening to Zach, you know, what he was saying there, and it's exactly right. Our history, when I was in the NFL with the Bears and we didn't have a mobile quarterback, we would oftentimes call backs cross, which, you know, you would have two backs back there that were set up to pick up any type of pressure that you'd get, and you'd have three receivers because you very well might get pressure in a third down situation of, you know, 5, 6, or 7 or something like that. But if it wasn't pressure, then the backs could get out. And instead of going to their respective areas on the outside, they would cross, and they were taught one to be over top of the other to try to get a pick or a rub right there so that the quarterback could actually hit them on the move. And then, you know, you've got the ball in one of your better players' hands in space. Now, I'm looking at, you know, with the colleges and everything this past weekend, and Keith, you did a great job of pulling off some of those that I looked at. And yeah, I you know, the one with Alabama was like a three level, almost like a snag, and it was like y'all were talking about. It was like a drive route, but at the end of the day, it was a picket fence for that great back who went out there into the left flat, caught the football, and then made about 4 NFL moves to score. But there's no question. And Keith, you might have said this either privately or publicly a couple weeks ago. You know, you're seeing all this stuff because I've been the one from a defensive perspective saying that the one way that you do kind of confine this RPO stuff is if you're going to jump down and get up in their face and play man-to-man football. So obviously if you got a lot of man coverage going on and you know that's coming and you got to believe that the Alabamas of the world are watching, you know, the Clemsons of the world are watching the Ohio States of the world or watching the Oklahomas of the world, well, you better have an answer. Because they're going to have an answer for your RPO. And I think right now you're seeing one of the answers, and that's crossers and picks and rubs and everything like that.
Yeah, and I think I misidentified that as Iowa State. It was Iowa doing it to Iowa State. But then Iowa State came back, and they had their own version of a pick play, and they ran this with their tight end running a drag a little bit deeper than the shallow cross as far as his angle and where he was going. But that, I believe, it was the number three receiver from the other side was just running right at the outside shoulder of the linebacker, again, basically designed to knock him off of that route if he was trying to follow it.
And that's one of the things I noticed with the college games I saw, and the officials will catch up, and the defensive coaches will, you know, they'll make sure they catch up. But the way we used to coach that, you know, just so you wouldn't get flagged, and because you do as a receiver have the right to run where you have the right to run to, right? I mean, they can't tell you can't. But when we were doing any of those crossing routes to where you were going to try to essentially rush somebody free, one guy was told to run at 5 or 6 yards and to maintain that path. He was not the one that was going to get the ball. So from a coaching perspective out there, if you're wondering, you know, just how do you get them on the same page? Typically I was all, you know, normally coaching the tight end, and the tight end was the one that was going to be doing the, you know, setting the rub or the pick, not getting the ball. So, you know, what I'd have to do is threaten him that if he wasn't on 6 yards because he crossed over the center, then, you know, it's going to be a problem. And so if the receiver understands where the first guy is going to be, then it's his job to use that guy to actually rub. And I think that, you know, you're going to see that get more and more perfected as you go on. In the NFL, they do it, you know, blindfolded. They do it so much. But when the referees start, you know, just like the old snag deal, you know, you go in there and you throw your butt into somebody, and you don't go in and block them. But I saw blatant blocks this past week.
Definitely. Well, moving on, looking at something we talked about a couple weeks ago, basically two sweep plays happening at once, right? You have a lot of what, you know, people call the bash or the backside sweep, as well as a play going the other way. And now teams are using basically pin and pull away from that. So what you have is a sweep with a sweep and the quarterback reading who he's going to give the ball to. Notre Dame was very successful with that play past week against New Mexico. They certainly outmanned them, but two very effective plays where they got that ball on the perimeter quick. And really, again, you're separating the defense. When you think about what happens on any play and what, you know, coaches are working on from day one is pursuit. Well, there's less guys to pursue when they have to respect a sweep going to the left side as well as a sweep going to the right side. And essentially that's what Notre Dame was able to do twice this past weekend.
Killed them. Full disclosure here, so anybody listening doesn't, so you know that this isn't always rehearsed. So he's reading that? I mean, I looked at it and I was like, holy cow, because just to give anybody that's not looking at it, the one I looked at, and I looked at both of them, both guards pulled to the left, the back ran to the left, but the jet coming underneath is who ended up getting the ball. You talked about great timing. I mean, it was they're actually flipping that ball to that jet. They're not handing it. And so it's like the quarterback catches it like a hot potato, right? And just flips it to the jet, and then everybody else is actually running the sweep to the other side. Is there a read involved in that, Keith?
There can be. Now, certainly we don't know. We're not in the staff room with Notre Dame as they put that in. But, yeah, there are teams who do read that. I know we messed around with that. Man, I can think of the game in particular. We ran it first game of the season in a little wildcat package we had. So, basically, the one runner was the guy catching the snap, and the other was the sweep. But, yeah, we were reading one guy to determine were we going on the sweep to the right or were we going on the sweep to the left. Zach, I know you've seen a lot of this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, I have no clue what Notre Dame's doing here. I don't know if they're doing it the way I've heard of teams doing it. But Oklahoma does a lot of this off their counter series. And I've heard that it's a coverage read where if they slingshot, it means, you know, say you get this motion and they shoot a safety down to the side that the jet's coming to, they will give the handoff on the counter or the buck sweep. If it's man or they don't slingshot it, then they will give the jet sweep. It's all to try to get the defense to be minus one, whichever way the ball is going. It's from my understanding, it's a coverage read, and more so he's looking at the safeties in the corner or the nickel to see if the safety slingshot, they will give it on the counter or the buck sweep. But if they don't move and the cornerback stays or the nickel stays, or if they run and man, then they will give the jet sweep.
Interesting. I would encourage anybody that's listening to this to go watch those two plays because they scored on both of them, right, Keith? I know they scored on the first one.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know that you could. Yeah, I don't know that you can execute it any better than they did. I'm going to definitely go back and look at it. We're definitely going to draw that up in the first down playbook. Anybody's out there listening, but you've got so many things on the first one that I looked at when they gave it to the jet sweep. I mean, you got both guards pulling in the back coming across, and I mean, there ain't a whole lot telling you that other than you better be aware of that jet sweep. But the speed that they executed that was impressive. We say this all the time as coaches, and we don't have a good enough appreciation of what the players have to do. But I'm sitting there, and I get it. I don't have a cowboy like I did when we were in the NFL or college. But I'm running it back and forth about three times to see if he pitched it or handed it off. That's how good the timing was. So once again, Notre Dame didn't run that three or four times. they've been running that one for about 300 or 400 times to get that time down.
Yeah, that's definitely something you have to spend some time on. The last play I want to cover today, and we'll mention a few others that we covered over on First Down Playbook in our All-22 Tuesday yesterday, but Clemson running a variation of the power read. And the big thing really I heard in clinics and coaches were interested in, and I did do a Glazer clinic past offseason on the power read, something that was very successful for us at two of the colleges I coached at. But a lot of the defenses are basically attacking that mesh point. So you're reading that end, and that back's coming across, and they're just basically trying to tackle both of those guys, disrupt the mesh point. So the variation that came out of this, and I think I saw this being run, might have been last season the first time, could have been the one before, but I did see it in prime time here with Clemson running it, was the power read with the back on the same side. So the back basically turns and he is running towards the sideline in a pitch phase, and that quarterback is staying square and reading that end, and you have the power scheme coming. So that end now, if he does anything at all to attack that quarterback, that ball is out to the outside and you have your blockers on the perimeter. Everything else really works the same as if you were a running power read, the way the blocking scheme worked, etc. But now you take away that variable that happens when a team attacks the mesh point. Now, I believe if you're going to run it and get good at power read, you know, something we spend a lot of time on, you know all the things that can happen to you and you have answers. And basically for us, it was to turn the back into a trapper. When we saw that guy really coming hard at the mesh point, we would just trap him with the back and the quarterback would keep it. But I like this idea that really keeps it clean for the quarterback, and you don't want him, especially if it's a guy like Trevor Lawrence, taking any of those unnecessary hits. So this one is, I think I saw it a couple times. I believe both times it went to the perimeter, but a variation of that power read now that, again, at least solves a problem with what do you do when teams attack the mesh point.
Once again, in the vein of always can learn, I'm looking at that and want to go back and even look at more just because it gets into the deal a little bit. I go back to my I like to turn things around to the defensive side, and I know on the defensive side of the ball that they are very focused on where the back lines up. If you're going to have any type of zone read or power read, it's all about what can the offense do from that formation. And it gets down to more about where are we going to put our three technique, where are we going to put our shade. And anytime you can run a play that screws all that up, then it's a good play. And I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, you cannot get Trevor Lawrence hurt on a zone read play. If you do, then you're about to go from the most popular man in the state of South Carolina to the least popular if you're Dabo Swinney. So I think that's exactly right. I got to believe that thing's being coached. And I'm going to go back and look at it. We're going to draw it up on First Down Playbook. But I got to believe that thing is coached like, hey, Trevor, there's about 98% chance this ball is getting out of your hand somewhere. But, you know, there may be a situation here where it doesn't.
Yeah, so I remember back in, I think it was 2016 national championship game between Clemson and Bama, they were running the same side power read pitch, but they were running the tight end from the back side on a shovel, so they were reading the end and either pitching or shoveling off him. And, you know, I think it's another way to keep your quarterback clean is, you know, you can still run the power read or power read pitch, but then, you know, you can keep that power element there with running the shovel option.
Somebody did that this week, Keith, didn't they?
Yeah, Charlie Temple ran it pretty effectively. And you see that being done a lot with Travis Kelce, right? He's made a little bit of a living on getting that little pitch from underneath and running it with the power scheme for the Chiefs.
Well, you look at that play that we're talking about, and you look at the play with Clemson and Temple, and you go back and you look at the Washington Redskins. And they ran a counter trap, you know, deal this week off that was very wing T-ish. But yeah, you start looking at your Travis Kelce types, you know, you can actually get a bigger back, H-back, tight end, F-type guy, you know, get the ball in his hand. It's an interior play a little bit. So I can see where that's only going to, if people are going to run all this misdirection stuff, those plays are going to just keep growing. It'll be interesting to see how this goes the rest of the season.
Well, we'll keep looking for some of these trends, tendencies, variations of the plays that we see week after week. I think it's a fun part all weekend long, watching ball, taking notes and saying, hey, we could talk about this one. So we do this in two places. Not only is it on our Trends Day podcast, we do All 22 Tuesday, where we pick out three or four plays and go over them on video. So we'll look at the diagram, we'll look at the video as well, and you can find those at firstdownplaybook.com. Guys, for the sake of time, we're going to move on. We did have some other things to talk about, but we'll talk about some of the blitzes we saw this week, as well as guys reaching into their bag of tricks. That definitely started to make an appearance here this last weekend. So we'll talk about those things and more next week on the Trends Day podcast. Charlie, appreciate all you're doing with us at USA Football in this collaboration with First Down Playbook, and Zach, always love talking ball with you as well.
Thanks, Keith. Always a pleasure doing it.
Thanks, Keith.
Be sure to check out all of our blogs on blogs.usafootball.com. In addition to this podcast, where we do share some of those clips in our show notes, we do write some extended articles on these plays as well. And as I mentioned, check out First Down Playbook and what they're doing there at firstdownplaybook.com and blogs.firstdownplaybook.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.